So I'm moving on to our next five movies. So I'm going to go through the 11th to the 15th. We have Iron Man 3. We have Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade, Gremlins, Jumanji, and Die Hard 2. So, in at the 11th of December, we have Iron Man 3. And Adam, I'm going to actually pass this one over to yourself. If you'd like to give us a bit of a breakdown or a few kind of highlights on this.
Yeah, so not too much to talk about Iron Man 3. Directed by Shane Black, who loves setting his movies at Christmas time. He wrote Lethal Weapon, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and this, and I believe there's another one that escapes me. Might be The Last Boy Scout, not too sure. But he loves setting his movies at Christmas. I think it works real well for this. Probably my second favorite of the Iron Man movies. First one's the best one. And yet the only kind of like tidbit I have about it is Shane Black loves setting his movies at Christmas, wrote Lethal Weapon. And this might segue into a movie we'll let me talk about later. But the person who wrote Die Hard loved the Christmas setting for Lethal Weapon so much that that's why Die Hard is set at Christmas, because he thinks it works as a great background thing. So Shane Black's a big fan of having Christmas as his background in movies. And I think it works well because, again, because it kind of like, as I was saying earlier about Catch Me If You Can, some movies build people up, so super happy people at Christmas, and other times it can highlight how depressed some people are. And I think it works really well for Tony Stark, because Christmas is a good time to put in someone who's kind of like, it's like depressed, suffers from depression, a bit of an alcoholic amongst all the charm he has. And I think it kind of catches him at his lowest, because he's almost kind of like beaten down and thrown away a bit for parts of the film, and kind of has to build himself back up a bit, literally. So I enjoy Iron Man. Iron Man 3, I should say. Are you guys a fan of it?
Well, like, the one point I'd say is I remember going to see an Iron Man 3 when it came out initially, and I think it was either March or it was summertime, and I was like, oh, a Christmas, like, set at Christmas time. I was like, no, why am I watching this now? And to be honest, I enjoyed the movie, but that was always playing in the back of my mind. And then I think it was last year or the year before, I watched it at Christmas time. I was like, oh, I enjoyed this so much more. And I think it's, you know, I think we all agreed on Iron Man 3. I don't know if it was on that list that we all agreed.
I think it was on you and I, everyone's Gogan.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
And like, to be honest, it doesn't jump out at me like as in, oh my God, it's a great movie. But it jumps out at me as a different kind of Christmas movie to watch. And if you're a big fan of that whole like the Avengers, Disney side of things, Iron Man, you know, it's a good one to watch at Christmas and to kind of get you going. But do you have any other points on it, Ferg?
Look, it's not a film that had a massive impact on me, just apart from the Ben Kingsley playing the fake. Oh my God, I can't even remember his name. If there's anyone that's a comic book fan, they're probably Gandhi. So I won't go too much off topic, but really great. He got a lot of flack for playing Gandhi, but his dad is Indian, and then he has like his birth name is an Indian name. Like, I won't even begin to remember what it is.
Spot on casting.
Spot on casting. Yeah, no. He was amazing. He was amazing. Mandarin. The Mandarin. Jesus, I couldn't get him. He plays the Mandarin in the film, and I think I was fine with it, but what people were pissed off was Ben Kingsley played the Mandarin, and then it was like a kind of a throw off for, you know, Guy Pearce to come in as the actual Mandarin that he hired him to play and whatever. But look, that's just like overly fanatic comic book fans. In my opinion, the one thing I'll say about it is, yeah, Iron Man 1, best of the three. Iron Man 3, probably number 2, Iron Man 2, 3. Yeah, it's a forgettable film in my opinion, but it's one of those films that if it was on the telly over Christmas, be like, oh yeah, geez, I'm not doing anything else. I'll watch this.
Nice way to finish up on it, I think. The next one is a classic in my mind. 12th of December, Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade. This actually didn't make any of our lists, I think, initially. And then we all kind of just came together and said, well, hang on a minute. What about this? Harrison Ford, Sean Connery, brilliant together. You know, as good guys, who better to have? And then as bad guys, Nazi Germany. You know, come on. It's a great. It's always on over Christmas. I think it's more on during the time of you don't know what day or what time it is in that kind of period between Christmas Day and New Year's. But I love sitting down and watching this. I absolutely love it. It's like Ferg. I know you're a big Indiana. I know you're a big Harrison Ford fan, but big Indiana Jones fan and big Last Crusade fan, or.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. I know that you're not a massive Harrison Ford fan. Sorry to call you out on that.
Yeah, but, harsh there. I did set you up for it, though.
I did. You set me up. But, like, you know, like, no, big Harrison Ford fan. Big fan of those films. This falls into the category of Christmas films that aren't Christmas films. They're not set at Christmas, but they're something that, you know, look, Butler will tell you, which I think is a great point, which is he goes off the TV guide and you're like, do you know what? It's one of those times of the year that we've gotten to the point of everyone watches stuff online. They're either streaming from Netflix or various places. And it's kind of the one time of the year that I actually sit down and I watch the telly. I'm a very rare kind of television watcher anymore. But that's one of the films that I love. And like Gogan said, I think it's one of those films that initially we actually had Harry Potter in. But like Harry Potter is kind of like a pseudo thing. We didn't know which film to go for. Butler's not a great lover of it. And then we kind of went, you know, what do we all usually watch around that time? And Indiana Jones came up. And we kind of made the decision on The Last Crusade. Obviously, RIP to Sean Connery as well quite recently. So it's, yeah, I think it's one of the best ones, to be fair. It's funny, it's action-y. Like, there's nothing wrong with Indiana Jones apart from the most recent film, in my opinion. So, but look, yeah, it's one of my favorite films to watch around the time, and I love watching it with my dad and my brother. And it's one you can sit down with anyone and watch. I think everybody loves that kind of adventure. There's not too much violence in it. There's the right amount, and I think it just appeals to a nice broad spectrum. Buller, any thoughts on Indiana Jones Last Crusade?
Nothing really you guys haven't said. As you said, Ferg, like, all the Indiana Jones are currently on Sky, they're currently on Amazon, so I can watch them whenever I want, but I'm going to be waiting to be like, what's the TV guy going to troll me? If The Last Crusade is on like the 28th on BBC at like 2:30 in the day, that's when I'll watch it. So kind of very traditional with Indiana Jones at Christmas. Sean Connery and Harrison Ford in this together, it's lightning in a bottle. I mean, you're talking top five ever best chemistry on screen, I think.
And
The last thing on it is the woman in it. I didn't know until recently, a couple of years ago, she's actually Irish. Her name's Alison Doody. So kind of shout out to her, because I think she actually does quite a good German accent.
I didn't realize that at all. You can be right as well, like, as in, it's so funny, like, as in, I think Harrison Ford plays like such, he has that gruffness to him, and then to have it was just like, whoever was the casting director, what a choice to have Sean Connery as his dad. Do you know what I mean? Sean Connery's a great actor in my opinion, because he's one of those people that, like, he aged so well with the roles that he played.
Yeah, there's only like, I could be wrong roughly on the ages, but I think when this was filmed, there's only like 14 or 15 years between Harrison Ford and Sean Connery.
Yeah, there's not that much. Harrison Ford didn't start acting until very late. I mean, he was a carpenter. He was building sets when he was chosen to be Han Solo in the 70s. And he was already 30, like, so. He started quite late, even into it. Like, I mean, he was getting small roles here and there, TV adverts and whatnot, but he decided to get a job there. But, like, yeah, I totally agree. Big fan of Harry Potter from childhood, but I think it was a great choice to put it out and put Indiana Jones in.
And we have this kind of in the middle of December, ideally, as we all said, this would kind of be around, as Gavin said, the time post-Christmas that we'd watch this. But Advent calendar's running 1st to 25th, and we did want to make sure, we felt obliged to squeeze this in somewhere, if not to watch it on this particular day, but I mean, if you haven't seen any of the Indiana Joneses, you're probably not going to watch them now. But if it's something new you haven't got around to seeing in quite a while, and if you can only catch one over the Christmas, make it The Last Crusade for sure.
Definitely. Yeah. And that's a great way to finish up on the 12th of December there. Jumping up to the 13th, it's Gremlins. I haven't seen this movie in years, truth be told, but I loved it. And to be honest, it is going to be one that I will add to my list on movies that I'm going to watch in December. I love them. I think they're evil, they're cute, they're brilliant. And as I was saying to you guys, as I was saying in our kind of prep work for this, I think a lot of kind of modern movies that have based kind of like funny characters have maybe used the idea of the Gremlins as well. But I think it's a great movie to add in. Obviously, you're probably thinking Iron Man 3, Indiana Jones, Gremlins. Is this a Christmas episode? But like again, Gremlins is always on over this time. You know, you'll. It might not be a movie leading up to Christmas, but again, it'd be in that period where you don't know what time or what day it is, but you can guarantee Gremlins will be on TV. I think it's always RCA, Fergus, if I'm correct in saying. I think it's been RCA the last few times I've seen it.
Ah, yeah. Like, I mean, like, the only thing I'll say about Gremlins is it isn't a Christmas film, but it's technically set at Christmas. Like the film takes place, I'm pretty sure, in like the lead up to Christmas, and I think it kind of climaxes on Christmas Eve, from what I can remember anyway, because it's one of those films that there's also a wintry feel to it. Do you know what I mean? Like a lot of films that I decided to put in as well that didn't make the cut would be films that have a wintry feel to it. I think Butler had mentioned one as well, which was like The Thing, which is in no way a Christmas film, but it's a fucking amazing film. But you know, it's set in the Arctic, it's constantly cold, and it gives you that kind of feeling of like, ooh, I want to stay inside, I want to wrap up, and I want to watch a film, have a drink, and just sit with loved ones, and that's not what a Christmas is about. But yeah, Gremlins is a big fan again. Look, again, 80s, love it. I love practical effects. It doesn't rely on CGI, you know, they didn't really have CGI in the 70s or in the 80s that much, but I hate films that are older that try and rely on CGI that like you knew that was going to become dated at some stage, surely. But like practical effects, in my opinion, if you do them right, they last forever. Like The Thing. But yeah, Gremlins, just a super fun film set around the kind of Christmas time. And again, it kind of comes into that bracket of Indiana Jones where, you know, what day is it? You know, I've been off work. I'm drinking during the day. I actually don't know what day it is yet. It's nearly Christmas, surely. And this comes on the telly, and you're just like, oh, you know what? I love Gremlins. It's great. And it's a fun film. And again, it's something that you can watch with everyone as well. It's like Indiana Jones, as I said. I feel that you can just get so many generations involved in that film, and you love it.
Tra-la-la-la-la.
Thanks, Dad.
You're going to like this.
What is it, a birdcage?
No, don't shake it. We're going to have to open it now. It won't wait till Christmas. Oh, honey, would you dim the lights, please?
Sure. Dim the lights? Dad, what does it do, glow in the dark?
It's important. Trust me. Go ahead, open it.
Oh, what is it?
No.
It's your new pet.
Come on, Barney, be a good dog. You're kidding. Dad, it's really neat. Where did you get this?
Oh, some little junk store in Chinatown.
Can I pick him up, Dad?
Sure, go ahead. Just be careful. You gotta be gentle.
I will.
I hope he's housebroken.
Hmm. Oh, isn't he cute? Has it got a name, Dad?
Yeah, Mogwai.
What?
Mogwai. I don't know, it's some Chinese word. I just call him Gizmo. He seems to like it.
Butter, look, any kind of, anything to add on Gremlins, I feel?
Just because I love this film so much as a kid. I remember going into X-Vision when they used to have all the videos and have like the horror section. I probably would have been like 6 or 7. And I'd see the cover of Gremlins and it would have Spike in it, the green one with the white hair, and he kind of creeped me out. And I was like, I want to rent it, but I don't. And I'd watch it kind of, and then I finally got around to watching it. And one of the notes I have here is this film almost ruined dogs for me as pets, because like after you see like a gizmo, you're like, I want a fucking gizmo, and the dog just doesn't cut it anymore. And even like when we were in Chinatown in San Francisco, Fergus, I was at every available opportunity, I was looking for that creepy shop run by the old Chinese man to pick myself up a gizmo. Don't know how I would have been customs.
yeah, we'll sneak it back, it's fine. Get a passport, all sorts. No, I completely agree with you. That's why I loved Furby so much.
Yeah, they are very relatable.
Yeah,
I wish you could put
like, was like my own version.
The brain of a Tamagotchi and a Furby, and I think you'd be onto a winner.
Absolutely. I loved my Furby. I don't know where he is now. God
probably,
rest
probably
him.
Mutated in the attic.
Yeah,
he's probably He's probably a gremlin at this stage. look,
it's like when they strike oil in The Simpsons and they pull out the hamster. It's like, super dude, if you're ever like renovating your house, you'll find like this Furby stuffed in the pipe somewhere.
I think that's
wouldn't stop talking.
I was just going to say, I think that's a good time to move away from gremlins.
Shut the fuck up.
I say that as Fergus is currently crying, thinking about his his whole Furby. Look, I'm going to quickly move this on to December 14th now. Jumanji. I'm not massive on Jumanji. I think it's... yeah.
Me same.
No, all right. Let me explain myself
here. How did it make its way in? How did Jumanji... I didn't pick Jumanji as my one pick. How did it make its way in?
Because, like, as I said, it's not a movie that I would go out and say, oh, I'm going to watch this. But it's always on over Christmas. And if it's on TV,
okay, so you put it watch in.
It. Oh, no, I did put it in, yeah. Which is, that's what I'm saying. Okay. Like, I'm contradicting myself here by saying I'm not massive on it. I wouldn't go out of my way to watch it. But I'd find myself, if it's on TV, I'm definitely going to sit down and watch it as well. Because, like, Robin Williams was a fantastic actor. And he always brought to life his movies. And I kind of find myself appreciating his movies more now that unfortunately he's not with us anymore. But yeah, as I said, like that's really all I was saying. Because overall, like the movie itself, I'm not like massive about, but I love him in Jumanji and I love him in anything else. So like I felt it was necessary to put in my top 25. Butler, I'm going to come to you next on this because if you're feeling like you're a big Jumanji fan.
No.
No? How the hell did this make it in?
like, I agree with you in the sense that, like, you need to have some Robin Williams in your life at Christmas. Fergus, I know you had Hulk on the shortlist. It could be this.
Oh,
it could be Hulk. Flubber. You know, there's a few you can kind of throw on at Christmas that are from your childhood. So, like, that's why I have it in there. I think we need to be, like, diplomatic about this list. And it's not just what we want to see as much as what we think over 25 days would make a nice variety to watch. I don't like this film because people keep telling me I look like the monkey child from it with my hair.
I knew it was coming.
Personal disdain out for this film because of it. Also, it kind of creeped me out as a kid as well, like how he kind of just he disappears. It always kind of, and there's a few, if you're a child, this can be quite of a frightening film. But yeah, as an adult, it's not something I really want to jump back in and see in a hurry. Fergus, you must be like the only fan of it here, don't you?
I'm a massive fan of Jumanji. Massive fan. I don't know how anyone that was born in 1990-1991 doesn't like Jumanji. That really baffles me. But and look, in my opinion, more to watch Christmas films. And you mentioned it. I put it in there because I felt like maybe this was more the university liked Robin Williams film, and I wanted a Robin Williams film in there. I would usually put Hook, and I'll get back to Hook at some stage because that's a Christmassy film for me. But I just don't understand how people don't like Jumanji. Like, what's not to like? Like, it's brilliant. It's funny. It's adventure-y. Like, I mean, I know you might have been scared of it at some stage. I was terrified that Jumanji was a real thing at some stage. The plants, like, there's just so much to it. Like, I mean, look, I think that Robin Williams is one of those people that, like Gogan said, like, I was deeply saddened of to hear that he had passed and in such tragic circumstances, because he's one of those people that, like, I feel shaped my childhood in a way. Like, there's so many films that he's involved in that I love, including Aladdin is probably one of my favorite Disney films. I mean, like I think that Will Smith did a great job as the genie in the live action, but no one could ever replace him. I mean, like, Mrs. Doubtfire as well. I mean, he's just that person that I love him. And I have a friend actually that I might have on. I feel like we should have him on as a guest at some stage. I mean, he's very knowledgeable about film in general, but he's a Robin Williams hater. Which I would love to have in mind, because it's such an opposite opinion. I've had many arguments with him about Robin Williams. But yeah, look, I won't say too much about it. It's just, it's a brilliant adventure film. It's always on around Christmas. And yeah, it's Robin Williams. What's not to like about Robin Williams in a classic 90s adventure kids film?
That's fair enough. And look, I think that's a nice way to end it as well, because at the end of the day, we all have great memories of him in a lot of the 90s movies that we grew up with. So I'll leave it on that point, and I'll move on to our next movie, December 15th, Die Hard 2. Where do you start with Die Hard 2? A great sequel. Like a lot of movies do struggle with sequels, and yet this kind of, in a sense, blows it out of the park. And weirdly enough, I'd still have the first one ahead of it, and I probably have the third one ahead of it as well. But it doesn't mean that it's a bad movie. I think it's a great movie to watch over Christmas. It's a great movie to kind of get, you know, it's not technically a Christmas movie, but it is filmed over Christmas. And it kind of shows you the carnage of, obviously before the terrorists take over, the carnage of what Christmas traveling is all about. If anyone ever has to go through that,
we can again, all relate to terrorists taking over the airport.
Yeah, do you not remember 2008 Dublin airport?
I remember I was going to Alicante and God, there's just this terrorist that wouldn't get out of the way when I needed that. That was clearly my bag. It's my bag. My name's on it.
But Ferg, Die Hard 2. I know we're all Die Hard fans here. What do you think of Die Hard 2 though?
Love Die Hard 2. And if you're getting a bit itchy in your seat about what's to come, don't worry. But look, Die Hard 2, yeah, great film, great sequel. And like, okay, I think that's probably the main point to make about it. As in, like, I love it as a sequel. It's great. You know what I mean? There's nothing. I don't think there's anything really wrong with it. Die Hard's one of those films. Yeah, okay. I was gonna say something there, but like when you get to Die Hard 4, like a death. I think that there's a certain.
Am I the only one who liked Die Hard 4?
Yes,
it's okay.
Oh,
Timothy Olyphant, Justin Long, it has some good stuff in it. It's not amazing. Yeah.
And
I think it completely strays away from the first three.
It does, but it's still okay as a film on its own.
Yeah. And
if it was a film, maybe I'd say. But look, the thing I make a point about sequels, and I make a point about films that are made in the 80s and 90s. If you were to say, for take example, our first film, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and okay, first of all, a remake wouldn't work because the first one is so beloved. But if you were to take that exact script, that exact storyline, put it in 2010. That film would have fucking tanked. It would have died on its arse.
Yeah, and I think that is
fair point.
But yeah, I was just gonna say set yourself up.
Man. Yeah, but there you go. No, but he's right though. He's right. But that's my point. Like, is in like there's certain films that belong in certain decades, and they worked then, but they won't work now when they won't work in recent decades. And I think that something like Die Hard, I think the action film in general is a bit of a nuance that it needs to evolve, because something that was good in the 80s and 90s is going to be fucking trash now. So I don't like that.
I do disagree on that, because I think it did evolve. It made it quite relevant in terms of it brought in, like in terms of how the bad guys go about, it is quite relevant. You know, they use the modern technologies that are available. All right, yeah. You know, I take your point on board that it could be a separate movie, you know, and if it's a separate movie away from Die Hard, it is quite good. But
I think maybe I'm too passionately attached to the first few. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Maybe I'm too passionate.
I think, though, like, for how long they were all away, Bruce Willis, and then Die Hard itself was away, I think it stands up quite well. Now, after the fourth, it dies. I won't even mention the fifth.
Yeah. I mean, the question, the car until Ellie got done all this. I was just like, I was a little bit like, yeah, look, I'm not going to get too far into it because we're not talking.
Yeah,
I'm going to go back to my original point. I'm going to finish off. Die Hard 2, yeah, I love it. I love the bad guy. Of course, it's not as good as the first one, but it's up there with one of the best sequels that I've ever seen, because it didn't, in my opinion. I love the first one more, but that's personal preference. It's just the best one, and there's no argument about that, quite clearly. But it didn't falter in quality, and that's my opinion on number two.
Buller, any additional points there? Any against the points to what we've said already?
No, I'm a big fan of Die Hard 2. Again, we won't get it. It's not a Die Hard podcast. We won't get into it. I think the third one is my personal favorite out of the three of them. And I'd also say about the only thing about the second one is, hey, you had your time to talk. I'm holding the talking stick. The only thing I'll say about the second one is I actually think that's the one that suffers from the weakest of the villains in the first three. I think the best kind of contrast to John McClane, the second one, is the airport policeman. He's a perfect foil. He's always kind of just making the situations much, much worse for John McClane. And he's great in it. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Going, I think you have a great point about the chaos of Christmas travel there. I mean, you could just make a movie about John McClane being in, like, you know, a security checkpoint for 2 hours without any come on, people! And it would be a watchable film. But if you want to, Fergus, I know you look absolutely flabbergasted at our Die Hard with a Vengeance comments. Before we move on, do you want to address that, or do you want to sit there and stew?
I'm actually more disgusted about one of your last comments, and I think doth my ears deceive me of David Goggin agreeing with you that he doesn't think that the first Die Hard is the best Die Hard.
I love the third one, and
will be my last podcast. I'd like to.
We'll get to that. We'll do a special in a couple of months' time on Die Hard, and that itself will probably last about 4 hours. But I think it's fair to say we're all passionate Die Hard fans, but we all recommend Die Hard 2 to watch over Christmas. Now, when we come back, Butler's going to go through 16 to 20. But before we do, we're going to bring into our next quick chat, and it's actually favorite Christmas presents. Now, I've had to think long and hard about this one, because I didn't want to give a plastic response like a PlayStation or an Xbox, you know, and that sounds like I'm a bit spoiled there by saying that, but, you know, you kind of want to remember something. I'm thinking more when I was like a kid and I got something, I was like, oh my God, this was deadly. So, like, the first thing I have on my list, and this is going all the way back, I was about 4 or 5, and I got this like toy garage thing, and I just remember I was like, oh my God, I am deadly. Like, I don't know how I made it work, because it was just like a pump and filling station. Like, what was I filling up? Probably nothing. But I was like, yes, look at me, I'm deadly. The next thing I have on my list is Sky Electrics. I don't know if we've all had this in our lifetime, but oh my god, my uncle got this for me 1 year and I was like, this is deadly. And again, the concept of it, just two cars going around, just, you know, you might be racing against someone, but at the time I was like, this is brilliant. And then the third one was I got a Game Boy Color one of the years, and that changed things. I think that's just before the whole PlayStation era. But I tell you what, I'd still go back and play the Game Boy now. I think it's
Game Boy Color is the same time as PlayStation 1. That's yeah, the same. They were at the same time.
I think I got PlayStation 1 maybe a year after. My uncle gave me his PlayStation 1, which says a lot. But I remember, yeah, like the Game Boy came out. I think my mom was like, no, you're not getting it because you're too young to have it.
It was definitely infinitely more expensive than a Game Boy at the time.
But I'll tell you what, the Game Boy, though, as I said there, like the last point, I would go back and play Game Boy now. You know, like I think
I still have mine. Yeah,
fucking brilliant,
amazing. Still have Pokemon.
Red or blue? Red, blue, or yellow? What's your side?
I got red, and I have yellow as well. Though yellow is a different kind of fish. Red and blue, same game, essentially.
Pretty much.
But yellow is a different kind of fish. Because you've got the little Pikachu. But look, we digress. Okay, so simplest would probably be the first time I got a bike that didn't have stabilizers on it. I remember I moved from the stabilizers bike to like a full bike, and I had a really shitty bike that had been recycled through like my older cousins down to my brother and then down to me. So it was a piece of shit. And then I got my own bike, and I just couldn't believe it. And I rode it around all day. It was like 6 in the morning. I must have like had it all morning going around on it. If I was to go back earlier than that, I remember obviously people our age were hit with like Pokemon mania at one stage. And like you were saying, Game Boy, you'd obviously play Pokemon and Game Boy and that kind of stuff. But I was really into Pokemon cards at one stage. When I was a kid, like, and I remember that I was off sick, and I can't remember why, but I was off sick for like an extended period of time in second class, and it was right around the time that Pokemon cards like became popular. And I remember I went into class after I was sick, and everybody had Pokemon cards on lunch, and I was like, I don't know Pokemon cards, and it was such a detrimental feeling to me. I was like, oh my God, I'm left out. And it's technically a Christmas present in the sense that like it wasn't given to me on Christmas, but my aunt and my mom drove me to Smith's that night, and they were like, this can be part of your Christmas present. I think it might have been November at some stage. And this is gonna be part of your Christmas present. And I'll never ever in my entire life forget that moment. I went to Smith's in Tala Village. And I got the starter pack, and I remember opening up those cards, and I can so distinctly remember the smell of those cards, the smell of that pack opening. And it sticks to me this day. And then I'd say the last thing, like in the more recent one, maybe when I was starting maybe secondary school, leaving primary school into secondary school. And you're right, you don't want to go like too high tech. And I'm going to say the Xbox 360, the original one, but not because of the Xbox 360, but because of the situation that happened. So I think I'm pretty sure when Call of Duty 4 came out, we were 13. I'm pretty sure. We were young enough.
Was it not older than that? No, was that 14, 15?
Was it?
Hmm.
I don't know the year that it came out. I don't know the year that it came out. If you give me like 2.5 seconds, I'm going to just really quickly. Call of Duty 4 came out in the year 2007. So what year did we start Terminal College? 2004. Yeah, so we were like 15. And it was just this exciting move because I didn't have a new console for a long time. I was stuck in the PlayStation 2. And yeah, you don't want to go like too high tech, but this is a huge thing for me. And the first game I got was Call of Duty 4. But also, I got a really random present. And I think this is my favorite part of it, was I got this Simpsons inflatable armchair that held your drink, and it had like a thing where your controller had like connected to it and stuff. And like, that was like one of my best Christmas days ever. I always go to my auntie's house. I didn't want to leave that day. I was like, oh, I'm staying here playing Call of Duty all day with Simpsons fucking armchair. And now as an adult, I was like, I love that armchair now to stick me beer in. But look, I'm going on too much. But I want to hear, I've been waiting for this segment the whole day. What's your favorite that you've ever received?
So I had a quick thing about it. I just wrote down three takes, because I struggle to remember most of my childhood, whether that's...
I'm pretty sure...
Therapy,
year,
I don't that, know.
I got a bag of coal next year. I wasn't beaten as much as I was usually beaten.
It was the softer leather on the belt that year.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was Italian.
That's terrible.
So I wrote down three things. First thing I wrote down is a PlayStation, because it's the first thing I ever remember getting that felt like epic, like you were properly excited for. Second thing I've written down is a Stretch Armstrong, just because they're entertaining. And I can also, as you just talked about the Pokemon cards, because I can remember the smell of that, those kind of the rubber on the arms or whatever it is, very well. The last thing I got, I think I was about 3 or 4. I was given a green tractor. As a child, I always wanted to grow up to be from West Kerry, so I was pretty happy with that. So that's kind of all I can really kind of wrap my brain around. I actually got a really great mug off my girlfriend last year, and it has 50 movie pictures on it, and you have to guess what film they're from. So from like, and all the answers are at the bottom of the mug. So like, for some reason,
cool.
It just has like a mask and Kill
that
Bill,
is a great mug,
samurai sword and stuff. So that's great. So yeah, that's it. And I'd have to have like a almost hypnotherapy to kind of go back and see what else I got as a child. But that's what jumped out.
Draw my childhood out of me. No, Santa, no.
Me and Fergus would really thank you for calling out your girlfriend. I mean, me and Fergus feel like shit. Kieran, Nicole, you know, we've got great presents of you. Yeah,
Colin's gone completely opposite to me. Yeah, I like your presence, Kira. It's like Nicole.
Yeah, I've a fiance here, Fergus. There's pressure on here.
Pressure anyway, on her, I hope.
Hi, welcome back. We're at our next part here. Starting the 16th to 20th of December, we have The Grinch, or How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Elf, Jingle All the Way, The Polar Express, and Miracle on 34th Street. So we're into the real cream of Christmas films here. So starting with The Grinch, Jim Carrey's The Grinch. Fergus, I'll pass this over to you. There's a lot of kind of adaptations of The Grinch. Is it your favorite one? Is it a childhood favorite? What do you think of it?
Yeah, look. By far, I think, I've seen the original kind of like cartoon version of the Dr. Seuss. It's definitely my favorite adaptation. And yeah, it is. It's one of those ones that I'm like, I have childhood attachment to it. But again, it's one of those films that I feel it has enough humor for a more adult audience to watch it. Like, I like those kind of films that are, it's like, okay, like Gogan had said before, if I'm babysitting someone, I can enjoy this film and the kids can enjoy this film. It's Jim Carrey. He's hilarious. He plays the Grinch absolutely perfectly. He does this like weird, creepy smile. He's just able to kind of morph his face. I've seen him doing impressions before on like Letterman and whatnot, and he's able to morph his face. But yeah, it's got the right amount of adult humor mixed with, of course, it's a massively Christmas film. And yeah, his Grinch costume is amazing. Like, it's just great. It is. It's one of my favorites anyway.
So whatever the reason, his heart or his shoes, he stood outside his cave, hating the Who's.
Alphabetically. I'd bark in, Abacanazer Who. I hate you! Harry B. Benson Who? I hate you.
Hate, 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 hate.
Double hate. Loathe entirely.
Gogan, I think you like it as well, don't you?
I love it. It's one of those movies I saw when I was a kid, and like, I liked it for the other reasons, you know, because I thought it was funny, blah, blah, blah. And I've gone back and watched it when I was, you know, as an adult, and it's so good. I was like, yeah. But it's so good because I think Jim Carrey just makes it. You know, he makes his own Grinch up in a sense. Oh, and like
he's perfect, though. He's perfect as Grinch.
He's perfect. Yeah, he's a perfect person to play the Grinch. Buller, have you seen the Grinch?
I saw it as a kid.
Jim Carrey's one.
I saw it as a kid, and I hated it. Something about, I was kind of rewatching clips today, made me remember why. The set design bothered me or something. It was really weird.
Yeah, it's...
No, I'm ready to rewatch it. I downloaded it today to rewatch over Christmas. I find the Grinch as a character very relatable, you know? Very angry.
as we said, yeah, it could be almost like a biopic about Adam's life.
And I was watching some clips today. I was kind of like, some of the songs, I'm kind of like, you know, what are they really trying to say in the message here, Dr. Seuss? It's like, you know, maybe his heart's too small. Maybe it's his shoes. Maybe because he hates the Who's. And it's like, what else rhymes with Who's? What are you really trying to say here, Dr. Seuss? What was that? I was like, is there anything to be made of this? And I Googled it. I was like, there's articles by Jewish psychologists talking about like anti-Semitism in the Grinch. So I was like, well, really?
I shout that comment saying, yeah, I mean, like, I'm not pro-Hitler or pro-Nazi party. I'm sorry for shouting that. But I was like, oh, you're obviously joking. But I didn't, yeah, maybe that I'm kind of, it's one of those things, maybe the more you think about it, look, we're not going to get too political, but the more you think about it, maybe you're like,
Well, I don't think there's anything in their face value. I think the articles I read sound like there was quite a bit of reach in it. It's just the rhyme and that kind of triggered it for me. It's like, and not to go too off topic here, I was watching Dave Chappelle do an interview on Conan, and he was talking about Planet of the Apes. He's like, Planet of the Apes is so racist. He's like, why? He's just like, think about it. The apes can't swim. And then one of them has his hands on Charlton Heston. He's like, get your hands off me, you damn dirty apes. Like, what are you really trying to say? So you never know what's on people's minds when they write it.
Yeah, fair enough. I think maybe like there's films that pretty obviously have that kind of underlying maybe racism. As we said, we're not a political or we're not gonna comment on socio-political situations, but I think a rhyming word might be a reach because the Who's are in multiple Dr. Seuss films where they're not hated, they are just the people. It's one of those ones again. Like, I agree with Gogan where it's like, I think when you watch it as an adult, you're getting, it's like when you watch The Simpsons as an adult, you're like, oh, I never got that joke before, now we'll get it.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's the perfect way to
we'll move to sum it up. Next on the list.
Can I just say, if you're listening at home, you should play the podcast drinking game. Every time Gogan says, I think that's the perfect way to end off, drink.
And to counteract that, if Fergus goes off on the tangents, you can also drink.
Everyone will be dead.
We'll move swiftly along to Elf. Now, Elf is a classic of sorts. It's been around for a very long time now, but I mean it's quite a popular one. I'm so an Elf. I think it's just too much Will Ferrell for me. It's a real sugar rush Will Ferrell performance. And I like him most of the time, but it's just a bit too much of him to take. But it's a good film overall. I don't have super too much to talk about it. But it would be a great bonding film to throw on with your 10-year-old or 8-year-old maybe at a push.
Wow! What's this?
This is the North Pole.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. Where's the snow?
Why are you smiling like that?
I just like to smile. Smiling's my favorite.
Make work your favorite. That's your favorite, okay?
Okay.
Work is your new favorite.
Fine.
Time for an announcement. Okay, people, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., Santa's coming to town.
Santa! Oh, my God!
Santa here? I know him.
10 a.m. tomorrow.
10 a.m. tomorrow.
Santa's coming to town.
Yes.
Can you sign this for me?
Oh, hi. Santa's coming.
Gog, what do you think, Elf?
Well, I suppose the last comment you were saying there, 10 or 11-year-old, I'm just looking at Fergus, and we're both like, well, I'd easily turn it on right now and watch it. No, I know what you mean. It can be a bit too much Will Ferrell. I think, and this is a great point that Fergus made yesterday, it's probably his, like, it's peak Will Ferrell in a sense that, like, it just works so well. And I think, am I right in saying this, Fergus, because I know you're a massive fan. This is the movie that launched his career, wasn't it? Like, this kind of put him on the... Just put him out there as like,
well, in a way, I mean, like, he had that, like, Night at the Roxbury film that's kind of like a cult classic, and it's only a cult classic because of the actual, like, song, you know, like, What Is Love. But I'm trying to think when Elf was, well, like, what's like Elf, like, what, 2003? It actually, maybe it could have been his kind of his launch, like, you know. I love that you pegged me as a an expert, but I'm pretty sure. No, actually, no. I think you're right. I think that Elf was out first, and then Anchorman. But I would say Anchorman.
Yeah.
Anchorman was like, I think Anchorman was the year after, and I'm pretty sure, like, Anchorman is like the one that obviously launched the mainstream, whatever. It's just a feel good film. There's funny bits in it, but I think it was the beginning. That was like, you know, at this rate. Which is kind of depressing for me, is like that Will Ferrell's kind of brand of comedy has died off, which is, I think, died off with the campaign, but look, that's another topic. But yeah, look, great film. It's nice, feel good. It's got some great singing in it, so.
Yep, we'll jump on from there, and we'll jump straight into Jingle All The Way. I don't have too much to say on this because it's one I haven't seen since I was maybe 5 years old, so I can't really remember it all. I want to rewatch it this Christmas. I know we were talking earlier this week, Fergus, like, you, I was kind of asking you, is this the first film to kind of show that Arnold Schwarzenegger has some acting chops?
Yeah, I think, again, like, maybe I'm getting the year wrong, but maybe, yeah, because, like, I love, I think, as I said about Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I think that, like, I like when, like, non-comedic actors make dip a toe into the kind of comedic side, and it works. And I think it really works. And he was perfect for it. Like, he's like, you know, he's muscular and big enough to you know, eventually play Turbo Man. And I just think it's funny because I always think it's funny that he still has his German accent, or sorry, his Austrian accent, like, in the film. Like, you know, he still has that kind of, like, it's just funny. And I think, like, yeah, his earlier films that I love, because I love the 80s, like, and stuff. And, you know, he was really struggling with his English earlier on. And I think that into the 90s, he started to hit his prime because he grasped English a lot better. And he didn't make this cut. This is me making a comment, but Arnold Schwarzenegger, he said in one of the films that I watched, he was like, I'm glad that you gave me less lines because my grasp of the English language wasn't good enough. And I think this is when he started to hit his stride and come into his own, really, like, obviously, like late 80s, like Predator and that kind of stuff. But yeah, no, he's brilliant in it. And it's such a good feel-good film. He's such a big, burly action star. And it's hilarious to see him in this kind of situation, in my opinion. I think you like it as well, don't you?
Oh, like, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. It's a great movie. Because I was kind of confused as well. It's like, is this the one that launched? Like, this was, when did this movie come out? It's 96 when Jingle All The Way came out. Because I remember him from Kindergarten Cop in terms of kind of changing a career path.
Was that earlier?
In a sense. Yeah, it was 1990, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah, it's just there. You know, he's like, his late 80s film, yeah.
Yeah, but again, True Lies was 94.
Was it, yeah? I'd say coming into the 90s is when he kind of came into his prime, like late 80s. Obviously, the Predator is amazing. You know, I love Commando and that kind of stuff. But there's early 80s films where he was like, oh, my English isn't great. I'm glad you gave me less lines because I don't want to fuck it up essentially. But I would say like Jingle All the Way is almost like Kindergarten Cop except for Christmas. Like he plays that kind of funny Kindergarten. I love Kindergarten Cop as well.
And that's the point I was kind of gonna try to interlink both of them with. It reminds me very similar of how he is in Kindergarten Cop, but this just has a bit more of a comedy effect to it, and it just works very well. It's a great movie, and it's a great watch.
It's such
a
funny film.
Yeah, great one to come back to if you haven't seen it in a while. And I'd be happy to leave it on that as well. But
Yeah.
We can move swiftly along. So I'm sure like the listeners now, we're balls deep into Christmas movies here. I mean, you're drowning in them probably. You're waiting for that sweet relief. It's coming around the corner soon, I promise you. The next movie is
Polar Express.
Going around the bend.
Paul's page doctrine on the Polar Express. Now, me and Gogan haven't seen it, and we plan to watch it this Christmas. We felt we need to put an animated film in here because Christmas is a time for cartoons. I think we can get away with watching cartoons a bit more. Like, I'm not saying you can watch, Zootopia, Coco, Lion King any year, any day of the year you want to, but Christmas it just seems a bit easier to just throw them on. And we wanted to have a Christmas cartoon in there. So with that, Fergus, I'll throw it over to you about the Polar Express.
Yeah, look, I mean, you both haven't seen this film. And I feel like that it was one of those films. It's a really good film. Look, first of all, it's Robert Zemeckis, who has done some very famous films. He's done the Back to the Future trilogy. He's done Who Framed Roger Rabbit. He's done Forrest Gump. There's a couple of other ones as well that he's worked with.
Castaway, I think, is one of his.
Yeah, I think it is, and I think that is Castaway on it? Is Robert Zemeckis? Is it?
I think so.
Maybe we're going off topic here, but my point was is that he's one of these directors that he seems to really like Tom Hanks, and he seems to fixate on. I'm one actor, look, without going too much into it, it's a fun animated film. I think the animation's really nice in it. I think that it's really well done. It's just a really visually nice film to watch. It's very epic for an animation film, and of course Tom Hanks plays one of the main characters, who's like the conductor of the train, and he just has this kind of inviting warmness to him that you're like, I fucking love Tom Hanks and I love hearing his voice. And they basically the animation is mirrored off like real people, and like Tom Hanks' character, it literally looks like Tom Hanks with a mustache as a cartoon. It's this really nice animation, and it leaves me with a nice Christmas feeling. And as the lad says, there was room for an animation film, so I'd highly recommend it, and I think the two lads are going to watch it over Christmas, so that's enough.
I look forward to watching it when I take it. Yeah, I look forward to watching it.
Likewise. Next on our list, Miracle on 34th Street, the 90s version, starring the late great Richard Attenborough and Dylan McDermott or Dermot Mulroney, one of them, and a kid from the Bible.
Which one is it?
Dylan McDermott, I think.
Okay, yeah. American Horror Story.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
He basically, I've never seen Miracle on 34th Street either of them, but I think the general plot is that in court, Santa has to prove that he's the real deal. Is that essentially it, lads? Is it?
I mean, that's the gist of it, yeah.
I
feel like Gogan out of the three of us would be the person that kind of asked about the film. I feel like I've watched it. It's one of those films that I think that over the years, you've probably watched the whole film in segments by watching it on telly, if that makes sense. Like, I've never sat down and watched the whole film, but I'm pretty sure I've seen the whole film in bits and pieces over like the space of like 6 years.
Yeah, I totally get that. Gogan, what's your feeling?
To be honest, like, I would actually completely agree with that, as in, like, it's one that you'd watch segments with over the years, but it's one of these movies that I got to put into like the parents category. My ma loves this movie. Like, she loves it. And like, you come down one of the days during Christmas and she's watching it. I was like, oh, for feck's sake. I just remember like sitting down one year watching it with her, and I was like, you know what? it is kind of a, it's a good pick me up movie, and it's kind of a good movie to get you in the mood for Christmas. Richard Attenborough plays a great Santa Claus. Don't care what you say. Probably the most believable Santa Claus I've come across. The kid from Matilda is brilliant in it.
Is he the best Santa in cinema?
Ooh, I would say so.
To be honest, I'd say so, yeah.
And I haven't even seen nice, the jolly Santa. Agree with that. Yeah. Like, this is like, I'm gonna make a quick point about this because it's technically off topic, but do you remember going to see Santa as a kid?
Yeah.
And there was a Santa, and I have a picture of him still downstairs in my house in the frame. It was a Santa that was an Arnott's in town, and he was
the real Santa, Arnott's.
Yeah, exactly. And I knew someone agree with me. Like, he was, I'm looking back at the picture even on his mantle, and I was like, what a realistic Santa he was. He had a real beard, you know, a great setting in the background. And he was just, I remember him being a lovely man. And he died, I think, about 3-4 years ago. And I had heard about it on the internet. And I was like, damn, that's mental. Like, that's like, and I was like, Jesus. And like, if you look back at his pictures, I was like, he's the OG of the God to see Santa. Like, no fake beard. Like, that man grew his own beard. That was his life. He went out and he did that for the love of children. Completely off point, but I was going to relate that back to Richard Attenborough being that kind of.
But that sums it up. That sums it up, Fergus, because in a sense like that, that's the kind of, in a weird sense, that's how you feel the girl from Matilda kind of picks up that Santa Claus as well, you know, like that kind of like, oh my god. And to be honest, it's a feel good movie. Okay, yeah, it's a bit dated in parts, but overall, I'm not going to jump out and say, okay, what Christmas movie am I going to watch? Miracle on 34th Street. But I think if you're building up to that and you're like, oh, you know, I have a few hours in the day, I'm really in the Christmassy mood, watch this, you'll be in a great mood after it. Buller, any comments on it before we move on to the next one?
No, and I'm not saying this about the Santa you went to see in Arnott's, but I had this thought recently, and this is just, does anyone else ever wonder if any Santa you ever went to see was a pervert?
Probably, yeah. Okay, so look, moving on to our last five, but before we just get there, we're going to have a quick chat about our favourite Christmas special. And I know that we're not a TV podcast, but this can include TV. And I'm going to throw it straight to Gogan because he said something really funny off air, and I hope he says it again. So, Gogan?
nervously thinks about what I've said off air. This is our favourite Christmas specials, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Well, straight off would be the Father Ted. Oh, I know what you mean now. It's the
you side eyeing me the whole time.
Yeah, because my safety bet was the Father Ted Christmas special, which I watch every year, which is an absolute classic. But it's the Gavin and Stacey Christmas special. Yesterday in rehearsal, I said Gavin and James Christmas special. So I can see why he was trying to set me up there. But look, they're my two quick faves. Father Ted Christmas special, which I watch Christmas Eve every year. It's just so good, and it kind of makes me proud to be Irish in a way that we have a kind of a good shout out of a Christmas special. And then Gavin and Stacey Christmas special. The first one, like the second one is good, but the first one is it is quite good. But I'll leave with the Father Ted one. Buller, any particular ones jumping out here?
I agree with both that you said. I'll watch any Only Fools and Horses, not just at Christmas, but any time of the year, but they're great to travel on at Christmas. I love any episode of The Simpsons that's set around Christmas, particularly the one where Bart is caught stealing a video game. Mm-hmm. And the Camp Granada. It's a brilliant episode. And like a Futurama Christmas episode, just watched the one there the other day with Robot Santa. That's great.
That's a great one. Yeah.
Well, there's a few good South Park Christmas ones. There's a great family one where Stewie and Brian go to North Pole because Stewie wants to kill Santa. It's very good. But yeah, that's kind of like, that's what I'd be looking for at Christmas anyway, regards to TV. Fergus?
I'm the same as you. I mean, like, you touch the only one that I'd add to it. Like, I mean, I love The Simpsons, any kind of Simpsons episode I'd watch. Futurama one, The Family Guy one is brilliant. Futurama one, I also only watched recently, which is hilarious with the robot Santa. But lots of Gog ones, Gavin and Stacey.
Sorry to cut you off. The robot Santa one, where it's just like, you've all been very naughty, except you, Dr. Zoidberg. And he gives him like a pogo.
Yeah. Here's a pogo stick you asked for. And he's like, wee! And everyone's getting murdered around him. Yeah. Except for you. What a random character to pick as well. Except for you, Dr. Zoidberg. You've been very good. But I like that, the fact that they brought that in, that he's like, you know what? You've been good. But if you've been bad, I'm going to kill you.
That was a good one. I didn't know that until I watched it there.
So who was?
That's John Goodman.
John Goodman, yeah. I didn't get that till not recently, but like when I was older, I didn't realize it. Do you know what I mean? I never would have copped it when I was like first life view drama. I was like, oh yeah, whatever it is. But then you get the voice, and you're like, oh my god. But yeah, I suppose like the only one I'd add to the list would probably maybe be the Royal Family. I love the Royal Family. I love Gowan's a fellow lover of Mike Bassett, England manager, which I'm definitely going to mention on a podcast at some stage. But the Royal Family was a great one. It's funny, but it's also it's very heartwarming, and it's just so real. I don't know, all the episodes, all the specials of the Royal Family were always very like fly in the wall, I'm going to put it that way.
Yeah, nice way to finish it.
Drink.
No, I said nice way to finish it. Damn it.
So look, moving on from our favourite Christmas special, obviously we're not a TV podcast, but look, we're going to touch on it every now and again. It bleeds into it. Moving on to the most important week, which is our last five. This is the lead up, and we've chosen this as our most Christmassy Christmas films, and I'm going to give you 21 to 25, and then I'm going to let the lads take it from there. So at 21 is The Santa Claus, and that's CLAUSE, as in a contract clause. Home Alone 2, Muppets Christmas Carol, Die Hard, and at the pinnacle, it was always going to be 25 Home Alone. Lads, discuss The Santa Claus.
I'll jump. Oh, ouch. What? Wait, what? Excuse me?
Which one? When?
Ferg is still the only bit of knowledge I have about that film, is that it's spelled like a contract and not like actually Santa Claus. I may have seen it as a kid, and for some reason. I always think I used to get this mixed up with Jack Frost as well for some reason. So I'm going to try watch it this Christmas. Dude. I think I've seen the third one with Fred Winter, whatever he's called.
Fred
Winter.
Is that his name?
No.
What's his name?
Jack Frost! Fred Winter.
Oh. I was thinking of Fred
Frost. Well, you know, Fred Winter.
That literally sounds like a movie that was going to be on Sci-Fi, which I feel like we should do a whole section on. Fred Winter. Like that couldn't have been the most Tesco little version of the film that you have to work with. I'm pretty sure it's Phil Jones.
I'm going to Fred Winters right now.
Fred Winters.
Well, look, Perk, I'll jump in then. It's a great movie. And I'm going to say my favorite line again. One of my top Christmas movies.
What is your top? How large is your top?
It's probably 10. Top 10.
There's definitely,
which is fair enough. I haven't said it 10 times. But I am going to say it for the next five movies that we're discussing. So, no, look, it's a great movie. Butler, watch this. I'd say watch it with Kira as well. You enjoy this with Kira. It's a great Christmas movie. Tim Allen is fantastic in it. Great Santa Claus. And I'm going to fully admit this. Did not cop it as a kid. That Claus was spelled differently. Took me into my teenager years to discover that, and it made perfect sense. Perfect sense.
Child. Yeah, I never got that as a child because he reads the contract on the card. Santa falls off his roof. The weird thing is in the film is that Santa dies in the film.
Yeah, I know.
He becomes the new Santa Claus. So it is a little bit fucked up in a way. Like,
the claws.
That, you know.
Are the sequels any good?
They're all right, but different movies.
Two is good. Three is pushing it. Two is decent. But,
they get out with Fred Winters.
I just think, okay, look, like, this is one of my ultimate Christmas films. That's why I had it so high up, because it reminds me of being the kid. It was one of those ones that I loved so much. I think Tim Allen again, you know, Toy Story, kind of a voice for your childhood. But I think that you'd love him, Butler. I think he loved this film because he's a Christmas. The whole point of it is that he's a Christmas naysayer. He's just like, ugh, Christmas. Ugh. But his name is Scott Calvin, and he's got the same initials as Santa Claus, and he's got these,
and he works in advertising as well.
Yeah, and he's got these bitching like silk red pajamas with like SC written on them. But he starts like getting fat out of nowhere. I think the best part of the film is where he starts getting fat out of nowhere, and he's like in the doctor's, and the doctor is like listening to his heartbeat, and like out of nowhere he becomes like grey haired and fat like overnight. And he's just like listening to his heart, and it's like playing like a tune of like a Christmas song, and he's just like, oh yeah, maybe you just need to lay off the sweets. And he's like, I shave in the morning, and then in the afternoon I look like this, and he's got this massive beard. Or like he goes into the meeting, the board meeting, and he's like ordering all the drinks and food. He's like, it's free lunch because he's this massive executive. And he's like eating in front of everyone, and he's in like a fucking tracksuit. And everyone's like, Scott, are you okay? He's like licking the inside of a milkshake, like, great film. Butler, you love it.
Yeah, missing out, Butler. Ferg, I think we should move on to December 22nd,
which is Home Alone 2, which could be a controversial one for a couple of people. I'm gonna go flat out, because we know that 25th is Home Alone, the first one. I want to go to David Gogan first, because he said quite a controversial thing and had quite a controversial selection. I'm just gonna go to you, Gogan, first.
Yeah. So what Fergus is highlighting there is in one of my picks, I said Home Alone 3, look, I had Home Alone 3 on cassette. It was a decent movie. It was a good enough movie to watch. Now, again, did it deserve the Home Alone name to it? Maybe not. I'm not a massive fan of Home Alone 2. I'm just going to put it out there. I generally don't like it too much. And I mean, look, I watched it as a kid. I've watched it recently. I don't like it. And I don't know why I don't like it, but it's just, it failed for me as a sequel. And I go as far as saying that. However, if it's on TV, I would easily watch it. I'm not going to be like, oh, this is on, turn something else on. I'd still watch it, but it's not one of my favorite Christmas movies.
But thoughts?
Well, when I ever watch Home Alone 2, I always think, you know, Kevin McAllister, he's just one more bad decision away from winding up on a milk carton. Because some of the people he befriends throughout the movies, creepy old man, creepy pigeon lady, I mean, he's going to be abducted at some stage. Home Alone 2, I like it just fine. I could live with just watching the last 20 minutes of the movie, pretty much. I hate when it's on at Christmas in the last few years, as people on social media will just find every point to like put up, oh my God, Donald Trump's in this film.
Yeah.
Irritates me. But not too much to take away from it. You know, I rotate Home Alone kind of every Christmas. I'll watch maybe the first one, then I'll watch the second one, kind of do like the Ryder Cup or something, just so I don't get overly sick of them. But you know, Home Alone 2, it's solid, but you can't really compare it to the first one. Bergs?
Look, just to finish off, I love Home Alone 2. I love it. And a big part of that is Tim Curry as the concierge. I think he's brilliant. I think Tim Curry is brilliant. But I love like the parts again. It's a more adult part where it's just like, the security guard's name is Cliff, and he plays the clip from the film, and he's like, they think it's a real person. And it's like, and I saw you smooching with Cliff, and you know, outside, and then it like cuts the Cliff's like little badge, and he's this little old man, and the concierge looks at him, like, I never. It's just like, it's brilliant. I think Tim Curry's manicness in it is great. Yeah, obviously Donald Trump's in it, whatever. But so like moving on from there, we all love Home Alone. I love New York at Christmas. Amazing experience. But look, we're going to move on to what I think is a personal favorite of mine, a personal favorite of Adam's. Not too sure about what Golden thinks of this film, but it's A Muppet's Christmas Carol. Now, look, we were going to have multiple variations, and there is multiple variations of this film. Well, of this writing, but look, we chose this one because I think it resonated with the three of us enough, and I'm gonna pass it on to Butter because I feel like Butter is a real champion of this film. So Butter, Muppet's Christmas Carol, take it away.
Yeah, well, look, I adore the Muppets. I think they're great. Often my only friends as a child, I Muppets, like Treasure Island, Muppets Take Manhattan, whatever. I love Christmas. Carol, I forgot what it was called.
Hello, Christmas, Carol.
That's how much I love it, ladies and gentlemen. I think Michael Caine's great in it. Now, this is like we're talking about how not liking songs in The Great Showman earlier. I think this one has a few catchy tunes in it.
Yeah.
Probably my favorite adaptation of the Dickens style. I also love how like Beaker gets away with giving the finger to Michael Caine as a puppet, and it just gets passed.
Yeah,
I love it, and I think it's great when it's on Christmas Eve because the goal to the film takes place on Christmas Eve. Yeah, that's all I have to say. That's a real handy watch. It's like 80 minutes or something, so it's a real easy one to throw on. And yeah. Anyone listening in the future, we're hoping to do a very special episode, another Christmas special about Muppet's Christmas Carol. We'll give a few details of that later on. But Gogan, what are your takes on the Muppets?
Well, yeah, thanks for coming over to me because, like, don't get me wrong, I love the Muppets. I went to Florida with my uncle and my sister years ago. And they had a Muppets themed like 4D kind of thing. It was brilliant. Like, it was the first time I've ever seen like a 4D thing. And like, I remember I was like, I kind of maybe appreciate the Muppets a little bit more because I kind of, you know, forgotten about them, but kind of just kind of let them go. In terms of the Christmas Carol, I'll be perfectly honest with you. I saw it years ago and I haven't seen it since. So I'm looking forward to watching it again because I know our Christmas special is coming up on this. So I am looking forward to watching it again. But apart from that, I can't really comment anymore. But if a movie gets both of your attention and you like it that much, I know it must be good. So,
thank you.
I can see why we have it up so high on the list. And obviously for our listeners, I'd highly recommend it. But look, I won't waste any more time because I don't really 100% know the ins and outs of it, but Ferg, I'll let you finish on it.
Look, as Butler said, it's brilliant, and look, it's probably my favorite rendition of the classic story of A Christmas Carol, like that Charles Dickens wrote. And it's just like I've never felt so bad and so emotional towards a frog puppet, on his child being sick. Like, I mean, like the Tiny Tim parts of it, it's great songs in this. I mean, it just gives you that good feeling. And Michael Caine plays Scrooge. How can you not like Michael Caine as Scrooge?
It's a great show, though.
You're only supposed to blind the bloody turkey. Like, he's amazing. The man's amazing, in fairness. And look, it's just one of those ones that's like, it's a classic story. Whatever iteration you like it in, I think that it's there for that. I think that on the 23rd, everyone has their favorite iteration of the classic tale, but this is our favorite version. And I will say, as a side point, I'm a big fan of Muppets Treasure Island. I'll leave it there.
Brilliant.
Say it, Calvin, and we can move on. Okay.
Don't worry, tell them.
What's up?
Our final two.
Look, I'll move us on since we've all not talked about it. But look, as I said, Muppets Christmas Carol, your favourite iteration is your favourite iteration, but look, it's a classic story that can span many, 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 many films, many versions. Moving on from there, the 24th, which is Christmas Eve, and we did talk about Die Hard 2, and we talked about it so early because we wanted to leave room for Die Hard the best, in my opinion. And I'm going to pass to Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Goggin.
Oh, thank you very much. But look, I knew you were going to come back to me because you haven't forgiven me for agreeing with Butler that the third one is probably better than the first one. Now, the third one, and like you have to view them as, obviously, they are different movies. They're different sharks, Ted. They're different sharks. Look, at the end of the day, I'm going to just focus on Die Hard. Start to finish, it's a great movie. Like, it's so good.
I wanted this to be professional. Efficient, adult, cooperative, not a lot to ask. Alas, your Mr. Takagi did not see it that way, so he won't be joining us for the rest of his life. We can go anywhere you want us. You can walk out of here or be carried out. But have no illusions. We are in charge. So, decide now, each of you. And please remember, we have left nothing to chance. Get them back! Not mine! Now I have a machine gun. Ho, ho.
Coming back to Butler's earlier point, a Christmas office party, you know. Me and you love it, Fergus. Butler hates it.
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine three of us at that party, you know.
All acting
differently. Butler
in the Nakatomi Plaza.
Butler probably trying to press the lift and the terrorists are coming up in the lift. It's like, oh, for fuck's sake.
The guy with the beard. What's his name?
Oh, the guy that's doing all the coke.
Hans, baby, what's going on?
I mean, the man's having a good time until he was shot and killed. He lived. He died as he lived, having a good time.
I would be Mr. Nakatomi.
But he wasn't having a good time. He was a rat. Poor Mr. Nakatomi, though, at the end of the day. I'll be Bruce Willis. If
no, Butler would be that. Butler would be that. The... Yeah. No, what was the cop's name that helped him?
Cops.
And that was the driver was called Carlo.
No, yeah, but the cop that he had constant contact with,
Sarge Al Powell.
Yeah, Al Powell, but his superior that comes on and he's an absolute arsehole, that would be both.
He's the arsehole of all 80s movies.
Yeah, you'd be Johnson. Him. It sounds like Mitchell a name Johnson. Like the standard some miserable old white bastard. We'll call him Johnson.
It is Johnson.
You think is it?
Yeah, that's what I was saying, Johnson.
Excuse me.
That's a classic FBI name, Agent Johnson.
Look, it's like I'm not gonna get into any argument here because I think this can be saved for a different night.
Yeah,
this is quite clearly the best Die Hard film, and there should be no argument about it. I don't know why there's no argument about it, but I'll leave that there. It's great. It's a Christmas film, you know. It's got fucking Run DMC singing a Christmas song at the start. Arlo, by the way, that you brought up, Butler, hilarious, brilliant, having a great time in the fucking in the actual limo while he's up there shooting people up. But it's brilliant, and Alan Rickman's fantastic. And I think, like, this is probably one of those things that at this rate, everybody knows the same kind of, facts about Die Hard, because it's such a popular film. I think everyone knows the same facts. It's like, oh yeah, one of Alan Rickman's first roles. I think he does a good American accent where he pretends to be one of the office workers. But I think you both already know this before I say it, but when they drop him off the building, you already know the fact by now, I assume. No? Yeah. Well, you know the scene where he's
actually hanging off the building?
Well, close enough. The thing was, when he's holding on to him and he releases his watch and he drops off and it's that slow motion fall, they actually created this about a 15 to 20 foot drop. Like, it'll be enough of a drop to make you kind of feel that kind of sick feeling in your stomach to drop off. Like, oh, Jesus, that's high. They had all this padding down there, and that's how they filmed it. They used the kind of like a background and the CGI for it. But basically, when they were dropping Alan Rickman off, they used a countdown for it. So they had the camera on his face, and they were like, we're going to count down from five. And just after one, we're going to release you, and you're going to drop off. But the director was like, I want a real reaction from Alan Rickman to him getting dropped off. So they started counting them down. They went 5, 4, 3. And here's him expecting to get to one or below one and preparing himself. But they dropped him on 3. So he didn't know that was going to happen. So assuming they were going to drop him on 0, they dropped him on 3. So his reaction to getting let go and his face going and scrambling to kind of catch himself is real. That's real fear from Alan Rickman going, like, that's the shock of you getting dropped off.
Wow.
Which I think is a great
point. I have one more interesting point to that. And I actually didn't think I'd have an interesting point on this because, everyone knows everything about Die Hard. You know, it's hard to get a point, but I think this is kind of interesting. The actor Paul Gleason, who plays Dwayne T. Robinson. So, excuse me, before the FBI agent, the Johnsons come into it, Dwayne T. Robinson is the asshole senior cop who is over Al Powell. He is the same actor who plays the crooked guy in Trading Places.
Yeah.
I only after a couple of that now, I was like, I've seen this guy before.
I didn't realize that.
He's the principal in the Breakfast Club as well.
Oh shit! Yeah, you're right. Oh my god. Yeah. What's that line from the Breakfast Club? I keep thinking Billy Joel, but it's not. It's someone wants their. Oh my god! Someone, you raided someone's wardrobe.
Barry Manilow.
Barry Manilow. That is like, does Barry Manilow know you raided his wardrobe? That's a great line. What a fucking insult.
Do you ever think, like, Al Powell in Die Hard is in love with John McClane? Because he goes from, like, knowing him all 15 minutes, and then, like, people are just like, who's that crazy man up there? And Al Powell's like, the man's a hero, leave him alone. It's like, you barely know him.
He's the most gorgeous man I've ever met in my entire life.
Al Powell went through a lot as well, though.
I feel like Al Powell hates regular life, and that's the way he's so invested.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, he talks to him with so much love in, like, the second one. It's just like, how are you doing over that side?
Because they're made to put
night in the tent in Brokeback Mountain. Like, we don't talk about it. It's just kind of mentioned.
Brokeback Nakatomi Plaza.
Alan Rickman, he's a cornerstone of Christmas between Love Actually, Harry Potter, if you watched him, and Die Hard. He's like, man's a cornerstone of Christmas. And even Michael Collins as well. And I think this kind of a good thing we're nearly finished up on now is that age-old debate, is Die Hard a Christmas film? And my take on it absolutely 1,000% is, because tell me what's the difference between Die Hard and Home Alone, really, when you break them down. Because Home Alone is a quintessential Christmas film for some people. But they're basically, it's a protagonist, you know, coming up against bad people, set at Christmas, defending themselves, trying to stop a crime. Like, obviously Home Alone is more child-based, but like, they're basically, Christmas is a backdrop to these two films, yet people will get so irked about being a Christmas.
Yeah. Like, You're totally right. No, you're completely right. And the one point I make about to agree with you is that it, like, there's so many Christmas references in Die Hard. Like when he writes on him, "Ho ho ho! Now I have a machine gun." Puts a Santa hat on him. He's going to her. Like, it's set at her Christmas party, and like in between scenes, you know, when you have that classic kind of like the music is kind of playing in between scenes, or there's always some sort of music in between scenes in classic action films. The scenes are the jingle of the bell. It's always like Santa's sleigh that are playing in between. Or like him sneaking around is always like, that sounds like Santa's sleigh. So you're completely right in that, buddy. You're completely right. That is our Christmas Eve pick. I mean, I put it as my Christmas Eve pick because I love going to the pub and getting pissed on Christmas Eve and coming home. It's still very early and you have to watch that film. But we're going to move on to Christmas Day. You've eaten a shit ton of turkey, stuffing, potato, probably a few chocolates on you, a couple of beers deep at this stage. It's after dinner, Home Alone comes on the telly, and quite clearly Home Alone, the first Home Alone, is and always should be the quintessential Christmas film.
My Home Alone 3.
Discuss Home Alone 1. We're going to go to the Home Alone 3 fan, David Goggin.
Look, you've summed it up perfectly, Fergus. It's the go-to Christmas movie. It's a classic. I don't think this movie, should I dare say, ageless, because it's so good. There's so many good points. And like, you could be flicking through the channels and Home Alone could be on and you're like, oh no, it's half an hour in. And you're like, well, hang on, the funny part hasn't happened yet. Will I just stick it on now and then wait for that to happen? I just feel like you're doing it an injustice if you don't watch it from start to finish. But I can completely understand why you would do it another way, but overall, it's a 10 out of 10 movie.
Yeah.
Everything. The actors who play the family, the actor who plays Kevin, the bad guys in it, brilliant. Overall, I love it. And I absolutely love sitting down to watch it every year as well. So 100% on my movie list. My favorite movie list.
Look, who can argue that that's the quintessential Christmas film? Like you said, like, yeah, you might see it earlier on, and I'm of the opinion that if it's on the telly, and I said this to the lads beforehand, for some reason film 4, how I'm gonna call you out on this, and I usually love film 4 because it's one of those movie channels that you get on your basic channels and sometimes it's a gem, but how dare you put Home Alone on in the summer? That pissed me off very much, because like Ogan said, if you put it on a little bit too early in December, you're like, no, I'm not ready for Home Alone just yet. I want to watch that film all the way through, and I think it's that perfect film on Christmas Day that you're like, I fucking love this, I know what I love about it. My favorite scene personally is Marv when he's on his back and the treasure's crawling across him, and Harry has the crowbar and he's like, don't move. He's like, Harry, what are you doing, Harry, and he's just like starts beating the shit out of him with the crowbar. But it's his scream that's the best. When Marv realizes that the tarantula is on his face, and he just lets out this roar of a scream, and I piss myself laughing every time.
Buller, what do you think of it overall? Like, I know we've said a lot of points there, but what's your two cents on it?
First thing I'll say before it's got in my head, I was listening. There's a great video on YouTube, and I really recommend people look it up. It's a physician reviewing trauma that the two burglars go through in the movie. And they say, like, well, in real life, that would actually cause a severe skull fracture and stuff. And how many times we should have died in the first film. It's a good watch if you haven't seen it as a video. Second thing, Fergus, I'm actually kind of glad to put Home Alone on in the summer. Not because I'd watch it, but because Die Hard is shown year round, and if you're going off the same logic, you know, like, then there's no reason to not have Home Alone on. Like, they're both Christmas films.
No, it's completely great. I'm like, no way you should ever put that on in the summer.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Sacrilege.
Sorry, Butler. 2-1 I voted here.
No, to me, that's like having Muppets Christmas Carol in July.
Again, I think they're different, because I think, like, you know, Muppet's Christmas Carol, it's heavily based on the idea of Christmas, whereas Home Alone is just stuff that happens at Christmas.
No, well, I get your point, and I get that, yeah, Die Hard is just an action film, but at the same time, regardless of the similarities of where we were going with that, and I agree with you with the similarities, I feel that, like, you know, in my mind, and I assume in most people's minds, Home Alone is the quintessential Christmas film, so you can't be watching that too early. No earlier than it start getting cold. You can't watch it when it's hot outside. I know Ireland is a shithole and it rains most of the time, but don't be watching it when it's warm outside. That's you're a serial killer.
It's sacrilegious, really.
And my last point on it would be, I'm one of those people that would only watch probably like the last, it's a good film overall, but I'd only really ever watch the last half hour. To the point where forgot John Carpenter's film for about 10 years, because I only watched the break-in scene.
Joe Pesci, yeah.
And you probably watched it from start being like, what is this fantastic movie? Oh, Tom Lund.
Yeah, the kid kind of pisses me off for most of it, so I'm happy just watching the last.
Okay, are you rooting for the burglars?
Yeah.
Kill him, he's a child.
It's not that hard to kill a child. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. It's not difficult. Strangle him, shoot him.
But maybe on a more positive note to finish the episode instead of How to Kill a Child, apologies for my co-hosts there. Home Alone, a fantastic movie to watch at Christmas time. Look, comment on what you might think your 25 movies would have been. If you agree with any, or if you feel we should have taken any out, let us know in the comment section or in the polls that we put over the next couple of the days to weeks.
Months.
Anything else to say on that, guys, before we finish the episode?
No, I just think we have that last little bit on...
We do indeed.
We're going to have all night is what compiles the best Christmas dinner? Gogan?
That and also I was going to say, like, I mean, honorable mentions, but I feel like we can throw honorable mentions up on my 90s.
What, like mushy peas, carrots?
No, it's so your turkey and ham, of course. I am partial to a bit of white sauce.
Ew.
Don't know if you ever had it. White sauce, unreal. Now, I'll take gravy, don't get me wrong, but white sauce. Mashed potato, roasties, carrots, bit of broccoli if it's gone, a bit of garlic potatoes as well, and a bit of stuffing, and I'm happy out.
I don't like ham. Turkey slathered in gravy and cranberry sauce, any form of potatoes, whether they're roast, garlic, or mash. Few carrots, stuffing, and them old croquettes as well are delicious.
Good show, actually. Sorry, I forgot them.
That would probably be... There's always probably something I'm forgetting. Almost no vegetables, please, but just like meat and mash would pretty much does it for me. Fergus?
I'm completely on your side. Almost no vegetables, please. Thank you very much. This is my Christmas dinner. I'm going to enjoy myself and I'm going to get drunk as shit. If I already am drunk as shit, I'm getting drunk as shit after this or during this dinner. But this is like the pattern. Yeah, 100%. It's the meats. It's the turkey, the ham. And there's nothing... The only thing I can add to what you both said is something that I had a couple of years ago that my older brother's girlfriend, her family, they live in Canada. So basically we had like a kind of a faux... Christmas. It was actually the 2 year anniversary of the faux Christmas today, because they could come home around that time. It was too expensive to come home for Christmas, so they had a fake Christmas. It's great crack. But her mom made sausage meat stuffing. It's not just your regular stuffing, sausage meat stuffing. And I've never looked back since then. I'm like, you have to have sausage meat stuffing. It's out of this world. Sausage and chestnut. Whew. Damn. And that's all. I'll leave it at that.
If anyone else wants to comment on their favorite songs,
specials, Christmas dinner, whatever else we were talking about 7 hours ago when we started this podcast, feel free to leave it in the comments below. We'll have an Instagram page. And lastly, we're going to start a GoFundMe, and whatever money we can raise, David Goggin will run 10K in a Santa Claus suit. I believe he agreed to it off air earlier.
We'll leave it there. For me, Butler, and Goggin, we bid you adieu, and we'll see you next time. Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.